Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, welcome back to another exciting episode of our esteemed radio program here. I don't know if that's true. it's not esteemed nor on the radio, I guess. But I'm joined this week by my dear friend Erica Wright. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I always like to be here with you.
If I've been on your show, kind of, if people don't know, Erica Wright is the education organizer with the Oklahoma Appleseed Project. You're also the kind of organizer of the Oklahoma Rural Schools Coalition, which is where a lot of people know you from.
Yeah.
From the Facebooks. And that's why you're here is, well, not because of the Facebooks, but to talk about the intersection of politics, tax policy, and education, public education, in ways that a lot of voters were not paying attention to, and probably still aren't, to be honest. So we are recording this on the 14th, July 14th. So we've got 42 days until the August runoff election, where, as our listeners will recall, there are a number of races for both parties. And since we have closed primaries, only Republicans and Democrats can vote in those races respectively. However, there are two surprisingly consequential, at least one of them is very consequential, state questions that'll be on the ballot that everybody can vote on.
For sure.
They are state question 844, which deals with, let's just say, tax policy, vaguely. And then state question 846, which deals with voter ID.
Right.
So let's tag team this, Erica. Okay. Let's talk about 844 and then 846. But I'm going to let you start with 844. Tell us where it came from and what it does.
Okay. So state question 844, like you mentioned, it is going to be on the August ballot. Everybody that, regardless what your affiliation, needs to be out casting their vote on this, because it does have a very big impact on current funding for public schools and future funding for public schools. And by the way, not just public schools, but this also impacts funding for first responders. So your fire departments, your local fire departments, your local police force, your county sheriff's office. So for a lot of rural Oklahomans, myself included, that's the only law enforcement that is tasked with protecting my family. It also, you know, any of your public services, so public libraries, city and county government, junior colleges are impacted by this, but the large lion's share of the impact will be with our local neighborhood public schools. And so a little bit of history behind what brought us to today. So first of all, state question 844 is, I don't know what the technical term is, but it's not citizen-led petition, right?
Legislatively referred measure. I think this is just to quickly interrupt you. In June, we had state question 832, which was minimum wage, and that was a citizen-led effort. But the two state questions on the August ballot and the two state questions on the November ballot were all from the legislature.
Right.
And that usually means they want to change the Constitution and they can't do it, right? Like, if it was just a regular law, they could do it on their own.
Right.
But if they're going to change the Constitution, they need the consent of the public, which is how we got here.
Correct. So that was a much better way of explaining it than I could have ever done, but that's your gig. So anywho, so this one is driven by the legislature. And if we go back to history, I believe back in 1985, so 41 years ago, I was probably busy learning the lyrics to Purple Rain. I don't even know what I was doing in 85. But back in 85, the citizens of Oklahoma voted on what is called the ad valorem manufacturing exemption, basically saying that if we want to attract manufacturing business here to Oklahoma, that the state can give them a tax exemption for, I think, 5 years or whatever.
Sure. And ad valorem is like property tax.
Yeah, property tax. Yeah. Correct. And so alongside, at the same time, the citizens of Oklahoma also passed what's called the Ad Valorem Reimbursement Fund, basically saying that if the state of Oklahoma brings in a manufacturing facility to an area and offers that tax break for them for the 5 years, so basically that means that the ad valorem tax that would normally, the property tax that would be normally going in to help fund schools and libraries and police and all the things we mentioned earlier, that if they give that break, that money's not coming in for X number of years. Okay. So the ad valorem reimbursement fund was set up to say that if the state's going to offer it, then the state pays that gap until the manufacturing business is off of their, exemption, right? And so that's been going on for 41 years. And now they want to change that. And they want to put it to a vote of the people that would say essentially that we're going to remove that from what's already been drawn up and give that money and the discretionary power of where that money goes and how much percentage of it is actually paid to the receiving entities in that community, that the legislature gets to decide if and how much, if any, of that money actually comes back to the communities. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty complex. It's pretty complicated, but it's not complicated in what the outcomes could be.
Right.
Right? Because it's a big chunk of money going away.
Right.
Potentially.
Right.
If they decide to reduce it or not give it to somebody at all. And so for school districts around the state that are currently already maybe receiving these funds right now because the state brought in manufacturing and they've been receiving the funds from the state while the company is getting the tax break, all of a sudden that money goes away. So for example, you've got places up in northeastern Oklahoma that would see $20 million out of their budget potentially be on the chopping block. I mean, this impacts also all of our bigger schools, but this is rural also. That's really hard to recover from. And so I want to explain kind of what pots for school districts that money goes into. Mm-hmm. If I can.
Yeah.
Or do you want to interject?
I do want to interject.
Yeah. No, go for it.
Just because I want to go through it and kind of break down the few components, because as you said, like, this is complex.
It's very complex.
When you read about it, I mean, the first few times I read it, I was like, I don't really know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Which I think for most voters puts them at a no.
At a no. If I don't know what I'm voting for, then I'm voting no.
Which in many cases is safe, especially knowing that, like, okay, the legislature wants to amend the Constitution. It's our job to figure out what are they doing and why. Why is it in the Constitution? And should we be changing it just because they say so? Right. I've not seen the legislature make the case publicly of why this is necessary, which tells me something. Okay. So of the to go back 41 years, this was initially passed as a way to say, hey, we want to encourage, we want to incentivize manufacturing facilities to come to Oklahoma because it's going to bring jobs and additional funding and whatever else, right? Mm-hmm. Open for business. We want to be one of those states, right? We want you to come here and manufacture things in our state. But that means we're competing with other states. Mm-hmm. And so we said, okay, we'll make it a little bit easier. If you're going to come build a plant here, you'd be paying property tax on that, which is thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, depending on how big the plant is and the investment in the property. And so rather than you pay that tax for those first 5 years, we want to give you a little break to get going, and we're going to like discount those taxes for the first 5 years. So you pay no property tax in exchange for you coming to our state. It's like one of those, I think our listeners are smart people and have familiar incentives. And so that's the part of it. But as you said, that means that without that property tax coming in, it's not, then we're out that money. And because the incentive is offered by the state government. We don't want to punish local government for the state's decisions, right?
Right.
We all agree that this is a good thing for the state and the local community, but we don't want the legislature to be like, hey, come to our state, and then it hose those local cities, counties, school districts,
communities. You know, they may have to add schools or homes or infrastructure to support this, you know, new level of employees that are moving in the community. So that's exactly it.
So I think we all agree that like this incentive as it exists is fine. And to be clear, that is not part of the state question. There's no part of this would like eliminate that that tax credit. The part that is at stake here is how does the state reimburse those local governments?
Exactly.
And right now, it's a like a flat rate, like it's the same across the state.
So whether I think it's I don't even know the details on that, so I'm not going to try to guess, but it's a flat rate.
It's like a standard formula.
Yeah, it's a standard formula, and everybody gets a certain percentage back
from the state. Right. So as an example, I want to hear about what this money actually goes to, but you know, a few years ago, there was all this conversation about Panasonic going to move here or not. And this is like one of those things saying, hey, you're going to come, you're going to bring, you know, 150 high dollar jobs. We want you here. We want to have this Panasonic facility. Here's our deal. No property tax for 5 years. And then whether you build that Panasonic plant in Tulsa or Wewoka, or Idabel, or Bethany, wherever. Or whatever. There's no way they could put that in Bethany, but you know what I mean. Piedmont, like, no matter where it is, at whatever rate that community was would be affected, they get reimbursed 100% of the tax they would have lost.
Right.
Even Stephen. Okay. So now this would change that, and I guess just leave it up to the...
I mean, it would leave it up to the legislature. So, yeah, that's exactly
what
it
would do. Which has never gone bad for our state.
No, that's never... I mean, that's not a bad idea at all.
Let's open up the kitchen door. I hate saying that, but it's so true.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the tax credits would still be given. The tax incentives would still be given.
The companies, Panasonic.
They would still get that. It would just, instead of coming out in a standard formula that's been... followed for the last 41 years, it would give that money into the hands of the legislature so they get to put their hand in the cookie jar and determine how they want to disperse it and in what amounts to whom or to what communities. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
And we want to believe the best.
Yes.
But experience tells us we should be cautious.
I mean, look at how many times people are always asking, like, whatever happened to the lottery money? Whatever happened to the, you know, all of these programs that they say, you know, are going to be for schools, and then they put the money in the top and they take it out the bottom.
Right.
Right. And so this is somewhat similar in that it does cause me pause as a voter that, you know, this is money that has been flowing into our communities for community services that serve our citizens. And Oklahomans chose to protect that and put it in the Constitution because they didn't want you to put your hands on it from the legislature, because they knew that it would then put that steady stream of funding in peril and mess up the whole balance of the deal, right? And so I think for me as a voter, that's an important part of it too, that this was not put into place 41 years ago by the legislature, and now they're just saying, oopsie, this is something that Oklahomans chose to protect this money for their local communities. Right. And so they're asking us to just give them the, you know, like I said, the keys to the cookie jar or whatever.
Yeah. This is so funny to me. I mean, this whole issue, when I first read it, I was like, oh, okay, changes the formula, who cares? But then, honestly, it was because of one of your posts, I was like, hang on. And I realized I needed to update our voter guide because I tried to write it very neutrally and generally because I didn't totally understand it. And as I've been reading more about it, and I'm like, oh, hang on, this is a big deal. Because to go back to the Panasonic example, let's say Panasonic was coming. And to be clear, they're not. They already chose a different state. But
see ya.
If they were, and we said, okay, you know, here's this parcel of land in Tulsa, and the property tax from this is going to be $5 million a year, but you don't have to pay it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go ahead and give Tulsa that full amount. They're going to get that $25
million. Yeah, and they'll split it up with schools and police and all that.
They'll do it. Or if they're building this thing in Wewoka, it's the property tax, I guess, I don't know if the rate's the same, it's lower, whatever. Either way, the city knows we're not going to lose out. We're going to get all the money. Mm-hmm. Now, suddenly, if this is the case and the legislature says, you know what, Tulsa, I don't think you need all of that money. Like, you really only need like $2 million, and the rest we could put towards school vouchers for private schools. we could build a new arch.
New plants for the Capitol. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever they wanted.
Lots of stuff. Really. And that's the problem, is like, it's the unknown of whatever they wanted. So they could just, it would give the legislature more authority to move money around, which they are always trying to get. If there's ever a loose dollar that floats by the Capitol, someone's going to try to grab it.
And we've seen that a lot in this last session, right? When they were talking about how do we, you know, can we take some funding out of the teacher retirement funds to put it towards teacher wages? And boy, that blew up in their faces. Yeah. But, you know, to me, when you look at the bigger, broader picture of what's been happening in the last year of them really trying to find places where they can get money, this fits in perfectly that they want to be able to create an additional pot of revenue for other things without having to increase taxes.
Right. And they would they could say, well, we didn't take money from public schools.
Right.
We took money
from the ad valorem reimbursement fund.
Right. Just totally different. And most people don't know about it.
No. And I honestly, I didn't know about this other than I knew it had something to do with our property taxes, which I thought, well, that's probably going to affect schools until I was able to sit down with some of our superintendents and really learn how this was going to impact their school communities, which is a great
segue. Yeah. So tell us, so what is this stuff go to?
Okay. You're really good at keeping things simple. I'm medium good. So I'll be medium good and then you can break it down further if I don't do a good job. So basically when this pot of money comes into a community, right? There's a certain amount that goes to our county services, our city services, and our schools. Our public schools take up the lion's share of the money that's coming in. Is directed to them. And so once the school gets it, there's three places that those dollars are distributed. The first one is the general fund. The second one would be your building fund. And the third one would be your sinking fund. So we've got these three pots. Now all of a sudden these pots are not as full.
Did you say sinking fund?
Sinking fund. Like and I'm going to explain what
that
good.
Is. Okay, good. I was like, because it's really,
building fund makes sense. So your general fund is what funds jobs, staffing, programs, right? So if we talk about cuts to your general fund, those are the things that you could see change. Like
personnel, I would guess.
Less
right?
personnel.
Yeah.
If it's really severe. I mean, you're talking about even programs, right? And what do we know historically when programs get cut? It's our extracurricular, it's our fine arts, it's our band. God forbid, I mean, it could conceivably even impact athletics if these dollars are not coming in. So that's if you lower your general fund straight out of the gate for the districts that are currently on this right now, they're going to see a huge cut to their general fund. So people are going to lose jobs and you're going to see changes in programming for kids. A second one is your building fund. And that's for all of your maintenance and security and utilities and things like that. So you would potentially see reduction in safety, not like SRO, safety, school resource officers, that type of safety, but just the ability to keep your building safe and maintained and the air conditioning working well and, you know, all of the lights on and all of the stuff that make us comfortable and safe in an environmental standpoint, that could be impacted as well. And then the third one is the sinking fund. So the sinking fund is where school districts have their long-term capital debt. Right. So for like their bond elections and stuff like that. And so where this gets tricky is, and I'm probably going to screw this up. I'm going to flip this over and get my notes so that I make sure I don't screw this up because this is the most complex of them all. So if the assessed valuation were to decrease for that district because of a reduced payments from the ad valorem reimbursement fund, it would cause a shortfall in that sinking fund. By law, when you have a shortfall in your sinking fund, you have to turn around and charge that back to your community by increasing their property tax to pay off the debt.
Oh.
So districts that have a large amount of money because they've done a great job of developing, you know, manufacturing in their area and they rely on this money, all of a sudden it goes away and they're in the middle of paying off a bond.
They can't pay it back.
They can't pay it back. The next year, everybody splits that bill to pay it back. Right. So your property taxes are going to shoot up. And then eventually, once you get it paid off, they'll eventually go back down, which also impacts your which also impacts your ability to, you know, get future bonds.
Right.
Or if your place is, you know, if your community is growing because you're bringing in more jobs,
right.
you might need more schools.
Right.
But you can't do a bond because you have faulted on
your
debt.
Your credit score. Went down.
So basically, so that is a very, very concerning thing for the, especially for the districts who are currently participating heavily in getting these reimbursements from the state. The other, probably the biggest concern that should concern all Oklahomans. So all of these things would impact, like I said, the people who are currently utilizing it, right? And then it would impact just, you know, vision, looking forward, being able, you know, our communities willing to bring in, are they willing to take a 5-year hit to bring this in? Like, it just kind of screws up that whole cycle of the future economic development of our communities across the state. But here's the big deal with the school funding that impacts everyone. So right now, the schools that are taking it, are participating in this program quite a bit, are typically, a lot of those districts are districts that are called off the formula districts. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of hard to, I'm really just stretching my mind to describe this verbally, but
right. Anything to do with the school funding formula requires
stretching your mind. Yeah, it's very complex. But we actually have a really good, equitable, balanced school funding formula. We just don't fund it. That's another podcast. Anyhow, so basically, in Oklahoma, in the state funding formula, there are three ways. So let's just say it's not $10,000, but just for the ease of math, say that each child this year, the goal is for each child to get $10,000 towards their education, the per pupil funding. Mm-hmm. So based off of where you live, that's going to be made up of different percentages of local ad valorem property tax. Then everybody gets federal dollars, right? Mm-hmm. And then the state fills in the rest. So if you live in, say, Deer Creek and your property values are really high and your district is pulling in a lot of money towards that $10,000 for you as a student, mm-hmm. then the state has to, they pay for 80% and then the state fills in 20% mm-hmm. and you hit that total.
Yeah.
But in a very poor district, it's the opposite, right? So you have districts that are not pulling in a lot of ad valorem, and so the state has to pay a whole lot more for those children mm-hmm. to fill in that gap. But then you also have districts that are called off the formula, meaning that their ad valorem receipts are way past that 10,000 marker or whatever it's like. So
they
don't need the money from the state. They are independent from the state for funding because they're doing really well with economic development in their area, manufacturing, all these things that are going on. And so all of a sudden, if you take those dollars away, they come back into the formula.
Well, right. So it's the cost of state money.
Yes. So all of a sudden, you put all of these students back into the state formula, and every kid gets a smaller piece of the pie from the formula.
Oh, right.
So the per pupil funding statewide goes down, whether you had a manufacturing plant in your backyard or not.
Right.
So it really should be a concern for everybody in this state that supports public schools, because it's not just what impacts your district or doesn't impact your district today or even tomorrow. It's that this whole ball of wax could really have a negative impact statewide on the entire funding formula. If those districts have to go back into the formula because they can't pay for everything with their local taxes because they're not getting the money.
Right. That's wild. Okay, so my head is spinning,
Erica. It's a lot because the school funding formula, sidebar, we are getting ready to put out a research report on the school funding formula from Oklahoma Appleseed that'll be written for the public so that we can start teaching the public how school funding works, kind of 101.
Yeah.
But it makes your brain hurt.
Yeah, someone told me really one time that I think it was a joke, but they said you could get a PhD in the school funding formula. And I thought they just meant it was really complex. And I think they were right. And you probably could to truly understand it well.
I mean, when I was on a school board member several years ago, this is really one of the more complex things. And I've had some pretty difficult jobs, and it's one of the most complex things I've had to study, to learn. And there's things I learn every year about it. But
And the whole goal is to try to be as fair as possible, right?
And the whole idea behind our school funding formula is actually great. Like, we really do have one of the most equitable, fair school funding formulas in the country.
Right.
But we don't put enough money in it. Right. So the little money we have is very evenly dispersed. You know, every child in the state gets the same amount of money for their education, no matter where they live, unless they're in one of these districts that are off the formula. And then the state's not, you know, throwing money in their pot. But
they will be
if this goes away.
Okay, this is wild. That last point. It doesn't matter how nice your Ferrari is, if you don't put gas in it, you can't drive it anywhere.
Exactly. And then you got to add the layers on that. That's just the portion for schools.
Right.
But then, I mean, again, like, man, if I'm calling 911 where I live out in the middle of nowhere, unless the sheriff's deputy happens to be close by, it's going to be a while. Mm-hmm. If I want to call an ambulance service, because this impacts EMS services as well, and you're in rural Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And now they only have, you know, two drivers or whatever. Like, this is impacting a lot more than just your public schools. That part was just the school part. But you've got, you know, law enforcement, your sheriff's office, your firefighters, your volunteer firefighters, your county, all the things. All the things that we take for granted and enjoy are going to take a big hit. And so our county and municipal governments are not thrilled about this one either.
Sure. Erica, who thought this was a good idea?
That's a great question. And I am not sure whose name was on the Senate. It was a Senate joint resolution.
Yeah.
So that tells me, without looking it up, I don't want to say names, whose names was on it. But, you don't really get a joint resolution going through unless it's being pushed through leadership.
Yeah. I mean, my question was more rhetorical than anything. But
yeah.
Because the more I learn about it, and there's a good chance that members of the legislature didn't fully understand this either, or they thought,
people who voted on it didn't fully understand. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have understood this unless I sat down and had to be walked through it two or three times before I fully grasped it. And unfortunately, that happens a lot, right? Like, we get these ideas and we push them through the sausage factory up at the state capitol, and then it comes out on the other end, and yay, we pass this, but they don't really spend a lot of time talking to the people that's going to impact the most to see what are we missing and how will this impact you. But, you know, from everyone that I've talked to on this one, that really it's going to be impacted. I mean, it's really seems to be that the goal of this is to open up access to a funding stream that they can transfer somewhere else.
I can see where you could frame it as like, hey, listen, you know, a big manufacturing facility is going in somewhere, and it's going to be a huge windfall of new property tax dollars for this community, right?
Right.
Big new place, lots of money. And it is like, I could see someone saying, that's way more money than that community needs. Now, that's
right.
May not be the case, but like, they're going to say, hey, but what if we took that extra
and gave it to
and spread it out
for everybody?
And I could see where there's a whole lot of public policy, as I know you know, that like.
That doesn't sound very free market to me, though.
No, it sounds real socialist, doesn't it?
Right? It does.
But like, that's probably why I like it. But like, there's, not that I'm a socialist, but I like caring for one another. Right. And I probably watched too much, you know, Disney's Robin Hood as a kid and like internalized those. Yeah. But like, we should work together to try to raise everybody up. The problem is that this has no downside risk mitigation. Like, it could be okay, perhaps even, you know, marginally better than the current system, but the huge risk is that it's way worse. Like, there's no bottom. Well,
and really, when you think about like lifting all, tide raising all ships, I mean, in a way, you know, if a district does get a windfall because they've gotten this manufacturing facility, that does keep them out of the funding formula that's dispersed with everyone else. Yeah, and so, you know, whether you hand it out this way or hand it out that way, everybody else is benefiting. And so it is very interesting to me too. It did not escape me that there's been so much talk between proposed state questions about eliminating property tax, and we have elections going on. Everybody's talking about eliminating property tax, and we've got state questions in November that are addressing property tax. That's like property tax, property tax, property tax. It's the hot thing right now. But it's really interesting to me that when you dig into this, that if they do this and pull those funds away, that that sinking fund default rolls back to those communities that are going to see their property taxes skyrocket.
Right. Because they would pass this to save property tax dollars. Oh my gosh, it's just a shift, right? It would be...
I don't even know that it's a shift, though. That's my thing, is if you get all of a sudden, you get a $20 million, you know, you got $20 million you got left to pay on your bond.
Right.
And you got to divide that between 6,000 people.
Yeah, it's a big chunk.
That's a way the heck more of a drive up in your property taxes than anything in these other things is going to save you.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a shift from the corporations who are the manufacturing facilities. They're saving money. Like, they're the clear winner here. They're not paying property taxes.
Either way, they're paying. Either way it goes. They're set.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, they're winning in this. But the risk is, instead of the corporation paying their fair share for the property tax, we are potentially or inadvertently might require regular people, taxpayers, to foot the bill. It's like, hey, I know the corporation is supposed to pay this, but we want to give them incentive, so you got to pay more. And I don't know, an Oklahoman in the state who would say, you know, I'm okay paying more property tax so that some big corporation can
build. They'll be like, send them down the road.
Well, and the other thing that I learned in doing this is that, you know, when this passed in 1985, it had a fairly narrow definition of what constitutes a manufacturing facility. They were like, you know, this is, these are the kinds of manufacturing facilities. But that list has been expanded repeatedly over time.
Over the years.
So now it includes data centers. And I was like,
Yes, it does include data centers.
The big companies that are benefiting from these manufacturing, I'm using air quotes because Google is not manufacturing anything. They're not really
data.
But it's our data.
It's our data. Yep.
But like if Facebook or Google or OpenAI or these companies come in and build a data center as a manufacturing facility, they're not paying property tax. So like
– and your community may not be benefiting from it at all.
You might lose your water. You might have to pay for them to come. There's all this stuff where it's like, hang on.
Yeah.
Let's look at this. I feel like someone's getting hosed and it's always us.
Yeah.
I'm not
typically one for any type of aluminum fashioned hats on my head, right? Like conspiracy theory. But, you know, there is that concern when you think in there, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of talk in the state with voters and on media about data centers and what those mean for our communities, what they mean for our environment.
Right.
And it's been very interesting for me to watch this. You know, step back and watch it from a 30,000 foot view of, you know, the upset and the fear surrounding data centers is not a partisan thing. Like, it is across the board.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know, this just seems like it adds another little shady layer to all of that. Like, okay, so you want to give these companies this big break. And you want us to pay for that twice.
Right. It is funny that all those conversations.
How does that work? And then, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to connect all those dots. But to me, and maybe I'm just over hyperreactive to anything the legislature does because it's just every year there's something. But I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to ask Oklahomans to pay twice.
No. Or thrice.
If they're having to pay for increased, you know, property taxes
Or utility rates or whatever else.
Or whatever.
And, you know, between data centers and this, you know, aluminum smelter and Inola all this stuff kind of comes together. And I think, you know, I know that voters get a bad rap, but I think of the small number of voters who do show up in August, they're not dumb. Like they, yeah. They, especially when it comes to, I think Oklahomans are particularly adept at saying, you know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably someone trying to grift on us in some way. And people are starting to be like, hey man, I'm wise to you. And in fact, when you go, this is why we have a corporation commission, and you go back to our like founding documents of our state, and like when you read some of the historical reports and honestly just read the state constitution, the word corporation is in there a whole bunch. And they, it really was the framers of our state constitution and the voters who were approving the constitution were very guarded against corporations pulling one over on us. And so there's all these, this is why our constitution is so long.
It's like the longest one in the nation, I think.
Because we want to put all these protections in there for people. And I think, golly, if ever there's a need for consumer protection, like this is it, because
things are moving at a rapid pace.
Yes. And we're getting hit everywhere. Like I was bemoaning to some of our my staff this week about how many subscriptions we have to pay now. Like it used to be able to, even for like a, you know, a PDF reader application on your computer, Adobe Acrobat, like you used to be able to download it for free for a long time. You probably still can, but it's like a very limited version.
Yeah.
But I was like, I pay a subscription every year for all this stuff. It's crazy to me.
Well, you know, and I think it, for me, just as an individual and a lifelong Oklahoman and a voter, I mean, you know, you could look at that like this. This took place in 1985. One perspective would be, well, it's been 41 years. Maybe we need to update things a little bit and modernize it. Or you could also say, you know, things really haven't changed. And this was a really wise thing for them to write in when they did it to constitutionally secure and protect those funds for the most important services in our communities because they had the foresight to say, this is 1985, I'm not going to trust the whoever the legislature is in 2026 to continue to put the money where it's supposed to be. And so that's my perspective on it is, you know, I think they were pretty wise, and I think this was a really good thing for them to put in, and it's provided a very steady funding stream for our local communities for 41 years that could all of a sudden go away. And so
the ability to trust that, hey, because I don't, I mean, every local leader I know would be like, hey, listen, if you're going to give an incentive, we just want to make sure we're getting reimbursed for it because we didn't agree to that incentive.
Right. That was your incentive.
This was above our pay grade. Y'all did it, but we want to make sure we're getting paid for it. That makes total sense to me.
100%.
Okay. So I'm a no on state question 844.
I am a no.
Let's talk about 846 real quick.
Let's talk about 846.
It's about voter ID. It's pretty. This one is the... On the flip side, very straightforward.
Yeah.
It is also a legislatively referred measure. Voter ID is the law. Voters approved that years ago. Very broadly, it's broadly accepted in Oklahoma and across the country.
How long ago has it been? It's been a while.
It's been a while. But it's, you know, and we can argue the merits of whether it's good or bad, but state question 846 does nothing to possibly eliminate it. There's not a risk.
No.
Like it is already the law. It's in statute, which is what I call the regular law. All 846 does is take it from the regular law and like promote it up into the Constitution so that if we did want to, if anybody did want to change or eliminate the voter ID requirement in the future, it would then require
have to go through
another constitutional amendment. No one is challenging it right now. Listen, I care about democracy a lot. I don't think voter ID is necessary at all, but I'm not going to, the voters want it. It's in place. It's working fine.
Yeah.
We all show our ID when we vote. This is clearly just like a political thing. Like it doesn't change enforcement. It doesn't change penalties. It doesn't do anything other than make it harder to change in the future. Am I missing anything?
No, that's what I understand.
Okay.
That's what I understand with it. And it almost just feels like a political top ad. Like this is something we could say that we did, that we enshrined it into the Constitution when for every day when you're showing up to vote on election day, it makes no,
absolutely
it's not a hill of beans. Like,
no.
It's, I, to me that's what it feels like.
Right. So someone can put it on their campaign banner and say, I stood up for election security, even though they didn't actually do anything.
Even though they didn't actually change
the
real law or whatever you called it.
Right. Regular law.
Regular law.
Yeah. They didn't make it.
They didn't do anything.
No. Which is good. I'm glad they're not making it any harder to vote. Good Lord. But like the fact that it doesn't do anything, I was like, oh, this is just someone trying to pat themselves on the back or score political points or something.
Get probably something for a mailer or, you know, whatever.
Appease the president or something.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if this doesn't change anything from the everyday outcomes of the process of our elections, and it doesn't make things more secure, it doesn't do anything, then I'm a no, because that's a waste of our time and money.
What do they always say?
You don't get to run around and just make stuff up and that Oklahomans don't really need.
No, right. I think the phrase we hear often at the Capitol is that it's a solution in search of a problem.
Yes.
Where it's like,
okay,
it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And some people will say, well, it doesn't do anything. Why don't you just vote yes? You can, but it doesn't do anything, except it would make it harder to change in the future.
Yeah.
Should someone want to.
Sure.
And any of us might want to, including, you know, regardless of your party affiliation or anything, there may be reasons to change it, because it often, as we have learned in our state's history, the way we worded things might need to be updated.
Right. Or you know, we don't know what's going to be going on in society 50 years down the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay, who knows? So we're a no on both of these?
I'm a no on both of these.
Me too.
If I don't fully understand something and it doesn't seem like it's something that Oklahomans are pushing for and asking for, I'm typically a no.
Yeah. If listeners want to share information about this, you guys, the Rural Schools Coalition, has a really great voter guide and like kind of a little one-pager about this one in particular, right?
Yes. So our voter guide, I'm assuming we can probably post it with the podcast stuff, but it's okruralschools.org/elections. I think it's elections.
I'll put it in the show notes. S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But and that voter guide has all of the information and explainers on both state questions that'll be on August 25th. But then it also has a nonpartisan profile for every single race that is also going to be on your ballot. So again, we have a lot of state races on. Let's see, we've got a U.S. Senate race on the Dem side that's going to be on.
Yep.
We've got a lot of Republican state races, and then there's still a lot of local runoff races for House and Senate. So all of those,
and
the governor's race. So all of those, every race that's going to be potentially on a ballot anywhere in Oklahoma is highlighted in there. We don't, you know, we don't tell you who to vote for. We don't give you any hints. We just give you, hey, here's where you can go. You can access their website, all their social media. It's all linkable from our voter guide, and you can go out there and do the research yourself and see which candidate aligns with you more. So this is in there as well. And we also have a just a PDF copy of this that we're going to send out probably next week to all of our community partners and school districts, so they've got something that they can share with their communities as well.
Awesome. So. Great. That's great. We'll link to it in the show notes. I think I have links to it on our website as well.
Okay.
Listeners, you can always go to our website, letsfixthis.org/vote, next to your little voter hub. There's links to our state question guide, other voter guides from rural schools, from the League of Women Voters, and anybody else we can find that we trust and is, you know, trying to do the right thing for democracy and post, you know, share information in a nonpartisan way. We want to get that out.
Yeah.
Erica, thanks so much for coming this week.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in the office.
Fun to be here with you this time in person.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, Zoom. Usually I get stuck out in the country on Zoom with everybody, and I don't get to in-person people all that much.
So yeah, it's great. We can high-five here in real life.
In person.
Look at that. Listeners, thanks for being here as well. Don't forget, the next election is August 25th. Tell your friends. Remind them to vote also. Don't just tell them the election's happening. Mm-hmm. Ask them to vote. Say, hey, I really want you to vote this time. Because turnout will only be like 10 or 12% of registered voters, which is a tiny number.
Mm-hmm.
And the one way we can affect that change is by reminding and inviting our friends to vote. Most people never get asked to vote. No one ever asked me to vote.
Nobody ever asked me to vote.
And they probably know we're going to vote.
Well, but prior to me doing this, I thought if I showed up every other November, I was rocking it.
That's right. People who say, I vote every time, every November. And it's like, oh, honey, you've got a whole bunch more. This is one of those, oh, honey, elections where the decisions that are made on these state questions and on all the candidate races will 100% be determined by who shows up, right? And if you are someone who feels disaffected by your government, you feel left behind, you feel like nobody cares about you, you are definitely the kind of person we need to vote, because that is not true. It is only true if you don't show up. If you don't show up, you are left behind because you didn't cast your ballot. So,
and I, the only thing I would add is this one in August is what I would say, it sounds dramatic, but I believe it. I think this is one of the most consequential elections for public schools that we've had in the history of elections that impact public schools in a very, very long time. There's a lot at stake, this and other statewide races that will really impact which way our schools, if we continue on the trajectory or if we start to dig back out to where we deserve to belong. So it's very important if you are a public school parent or just a community, I mean, that they're the heart of our communities, right? And so if nothing else, get out there to support your local public schools in this election as well. And a lot of school districts will have bond elections on the ballot too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We should have a whole episode about that, just because people don't understand. And there's like a higher threshold. Like, it's a lot of things that go into it. You get 60% to pass.
60% they have to pass.
Which means, like, when low turnout happens, it really takes more people showing up with the purpose of saying yes on those bond elections.
For sure.
And we've seen it happen in school districts where the bond didn't pass. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do like roof repairs. They couldn't build schools they needed. And then parents were all upset that like, well, nothing ever changes. Like, well, you voted no, man.
Right.
Like, this is how we have to do things together. Yeah. So we got to do the thing.
You got to do the thing. You got to show up. Be an American.
That's right. Vote. All right. Listeners, do the thing.
Do the thing.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.